This week's parsha of Parshas Vayakel continues the theme that we've been discussing the last number of weeks of the centrality of building of the Mishkan of the Tabernacle for the Jewish people. We saw the command in Parshios Truma and Tetzaveh. Kitisa also had some details in connection with the building of the Mishkan, the Kiyor, the wash basin as we spoke about, and the Ketoret, the incense, what the spices were. Then the bulk of Kitisa was the sin of the golden calf and ultimately the reconciliation between God and the people. And then the parashios continue by Yakel this week and Mirza Shempekude next week with the actual construction of the Mishkan, where the people actually get together, donate the materials, and we have recorded how exactly were all the materials put together in order to construct the vessels, the kalim, for the Mishkan. I'd like to raise a number of questions that are found in the beginning of this week's parasha of Vayakel and connecting it with the end of last week's parasha of Kitisa and trying to get perhaps an insight into our own lives that we can learn from this parasha. So the parasha begins off in source number one, where Moshe assembled the entire assembly of the children of Israel, and that's the word Vayakel, the assembly of the people, and he said to them, these are the things that Hashem commanded to do them. On 6 days work may be done, but the seventh day shall be holy for you, a day of complete rest for Hashem. Whoever does work on it shall be put to death. You shall not kindle a fire in your dwellings on the Shabbat day. And then Moshe, verse 4, continues speaking to the entire assembly, asking them to indeed donate those items that were requested at the beginning of Parshas Truma. So the first number of questions that we need to ask is, why is it necessary, before Moshe Rabbeinu is going to speak about, once again, the actual contributions to the Mishkan, that the first thing he speaks to them about is the mitzvah of Shabbos? And indeed, we know that this Parshas Vayakel happens on the day after Yom Kippur, the day when Moshe Rabbeinu comes down, the next day after he gets forgiveness from the people. And it says, if the first thing out of his mouth, before he even speaks about the Binyan of Mishkan, even before he speaks about the construction of the Mishkan, of the tabernacle, is remember to keep Shabbat. We need to understand what is the centrality of Shabbat, that it plays such an important role, such an important place in this whole building or rebuilding of the Jewish people. The question really begs itself further, is if we look carefully at the beginning of Parsha Kitisa, we see that right after Hashem commanded the last things, right before the sin of the golden calf, the last items for the Mishkan, the last thing before the sin of the golden calf is HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, tell the people about the mitzvah of Shabbos. So it's very interesting that before the sin of the golden calf, we first have all the items connected with the Mishkan, and we end with Shabbos. Now after the sin, it's as if we begin with Shabbos and then speak about the rest of the items connected with the Mishkan. So it's really two parts of one question. The question is, what is the connection between the Mishkan and Shabbos, as Shabbos plays such a key role that it is the mitzvah that's always mentioned in connection with Shabbos? That's part A of the question. And part B of the question is, why is the order reversed? Why before the sin of the golden calf do we first have items connected with the tabernacle and then Shabbos? And now after the sin of the golden calf, we begin with the items of Shabbos and then the items of the tabernacle. Our second question is, when discussing Shabbos, the Torah really does not give us any specific halachas or any specific malachas, prohibitive acts that we can't do on Shabbos. And here's the exception. It generally says, do not work on Shabbos. In verse 3, we have a specific act mentioned. You shall not kindle a fire in any of your dwellings on the Shabbat day. Our second question is, what is it specific about the kindling of fire of Lo Tivaru Esh V'Chomo Shosecha, that you should not have any fire kindled among your house B'Yom HaShabbos on the Shabbat day? And we know the Karaites, who took the Torah literally, would not have any light on in their whole house on Shabbos, or would not leave any cooking utensil on, like we have with the hot tray or the blech or the crock pot. They lived in total darkness, except what the Torah says, and they take the Torah literally. But we understand it means that we cannot create fire on Shabbos. Question number two is, what is specific about fire that this is what is mentioned? Our third question asks, what is the connection between the beginning of Parshas Vayakel and the way Parsha Kitisa ends? think the way Parsha Ki Tisa ends is one of the most powerful imageries I personally feel in all of Chumash. I'm emotionally very drawn to this section. And that is when Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from the mountain. Right at the end of Ki Tisa, we have when Moshe descended from Mount Sinai with the two tablets of the testimony in the hand of Moshe. As he descended from the mountain, Moshe did not know that the skin of his face had become radiant when he had spoken to him. Karan or Panav, Moshe Rabbeinu's face was aglow, was a light. And in fact, because of it, people were afraid to come near to him because his face was just shining. So there was a certain fear. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, don't be afraid. And he would draw the people closer. And anytime he would speak with the people, they were able to see this radiant face. And when he spoke to God, they saw this radiant face. But in verse 33, when Moshe finished speaking with them, he placed a mask on his face. So when Moshe came before Hashem to speak with him, he removed the mask until his departure. Then he would leave and tell the children whatever he had been commanded. When the children of Israel saw Moshe's face, and Moshe's face had become radiant, Moshe put the mask back on his face until he came to speak with him. So we know that any time Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to the people and taught them Torah or spoke directly to God, he did not wear a mask. But any time he acted as an individual in interacting with the people, so that's when he put a mask on because his face was too shiny for people to even look at it. It was just beyond this world, so to speak. Now, just to add parenthetically, because it's a beautiful idea that Ramosha brings as well as other Mefarshim, is that we learn here the importance of a student-teacher relationship. That when Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching his students, he did not wear a mask. And that's for two reasons. One is that a teacher must see his students. It's not just physically seeing his students. A teacher must really, to have that visual contact, to really understand where are the students vis-a-vis that which you are trying to communicate with them. And likewise, it's very important for the students to see the teacher. The pasuk in Yeshaya, Vayu einecha ra'ot et morecha, and your eyes should see your teacher. There's something very important about actually having visual, physical contact between student and teacher without a barrier, without a masveh. But the third question then becomes, the Torah ends Parsha Ki Tisa with this concept of Moshe wearing a mask, and then immediately begins in Parsha Vayakel the concept of Shabbos. What is the connection between Moshe wearing the mask, Moshe's face being aglow, with the concept of Shabbos? That's our third question. And our final question, it's a very, very beautiful pasuk, which is found toward the end of Parsha Vayakel, in describing the kiyor, in describing this laver, this wash basin that is made. So it says, the 38th chapter, the 8th verse, it says, he made the laver of copper and its base of copper. And what was it made from? It was made from the mirrors of the legions who massed at the entrance of the tent of meeting. It was made from the mirrors that the women donated. And we'll talk about these mirrors, they're very famous mirrors. And it then describes these women as Sof'ot Petach Olamoe, who come together, who massed at the entrance of the tent of meeting. So our final question is, what is the significance of these mirrors? What does it mean that they gathered at the tent of meeting? What rallying is going on here? What's the significance? What's the symbolism? So just to recap our four questions, number one is centrality of Shabbos and why is the order reversed before the sin and after the sin? Question number two is what is the specific concept of not to kindle a fire in our house? What's the significance of that? Question number three is the connection between the light, the face, the glow of Moshe Rabbeinu and Shabbos, which begins our parsha. And the final question is the significance and the symbolism of these copper mirrors that the women donated for the Mishkan that were found in the Kiyor, that were found on the wash basin. I'd like to look at these ideas along two approaches. Slightly different than the way we normally do, so I'd just like to lay out the groundwork of where we're headed today. I'd like to look at the concept of Shabbos on two levels. According to level number one, we will look at together the concept of Moshe's face being aglow, as well as the role of the woman. And the second level, we'll once again look at the level of Shabbos, but instead of focusing on the mask, we'll focus in on the concept of the fire, and once again, the role of the woman. So while everything will be on both levels, the mask will only be on one level, and the fire will only be according to one level. And that's how we'll divide up our approach for this morning. The first level, the first idea, I'd like to look at an approach, a very, very beautiful approach, based on the writings of the Siftei Chaim, Rav Chaim Friedlander, in the third chelik of the Siftei Chaim. The Siftei Chaim brings down really very, very fundamental ideas, and some of them we have discussed here in the past, but really crucial for what life is all about, for people who are interested in living life beyond the mundane. And understanding in this concept of life the role of Shabbos. So he begins in Source 6, quoting the Das Tfunos, the Ramchal, by speaking about where all things begin, what happened before Adam sinned, because that really gives us the focus of where we should be headed. That gives us almost the world view of what the perfect world is all about, what is the world we are striving to come back to, or to achieve within our lives. So he speaks about that, the Ramchal speaks about in Das Tfunos, that Adam Arishon, before he sinned, Hayu kol inyanav gam inyanei haguf kodesh kodashim. All aspects of Adam Arishon's life were kodesh kodashim, were holy of holies. Everything that he did, bechol pula she'asa, in every action, lo hayita hitarvut shal megama acharet, zulati avodat Hashem. The model of Adam Arishon is a model of an individual who's able to take his entire life with one megama, with one purpose, and that's avodat Hashem. That everything he did, whether it's on the physical level, whatever actions he did, had one purpose only and one thing in mind, and that was the service of God. And that's how he explains the verse we spoke about a number of weeks ago, of the lohis boshashu, they were not embarrassed, when they didn't have clothes on. What is the concept of not being embarrassed? It's not just a question of not having clothes, not being embarrassed. Their whole lives could be really characterized as by not being embarrassed. What does embarrassment mean? Embarrassment means when you do something that you know is against, stands in contradistinction to that which you know is right. So if a person steals, for example, and they know they shouldn't steal, or a person cheats and they know they shouldn't cheat, so they're embarrassed because they know they've done something wrong that they shouldn't have done. Lo hisposhashu means on the most simple level is that there was no embarrassment because there was no stira, there was no contradiction in that which they did and that which they knew was right. That which they did is that which they knew was right. They lived perfect lives. They lived lives that were just given over to God and there was nothing else that was intermingled in between. The result of sinning was the result of the hitarvut of the tov and ra. It was a mixture of the good and bad, and that's where our lives are at ever since. Our lives are about being able to separate the good from the bad. Our lives are being able to understand that even in a physical world, we have to see the good, we have to see the ruchnias, we have to see the ability to be able to connect with God. And he says, perhaps the greatest model of post-Adam sin is the model of the wheat. Where before Adam sinned, speak about this imagery of like loaves of bread were going on the trees. And that's an imagery of what will happen in the future. What happened since he sinned? So we have something called wheat. And we know what you do with wheat. Wheat is useless, basically. You have to take the wheat and you have to plant and then plow and then reap and then harvest and then winnow and then, right, and then you have to grind the wheat and they have to make it into flour. Shkivalta, what a process. That process of wheat is what life is about. Where beforehand we had the perfected state, now we have to take that stalk of wheat and transform it into an edible state. And that's what life is about. Life is about taking that which we have within us and going through a process in order to perfect it to a state of ruchnias, to a state of holiness. I'll just add parenthetically, because it has halachic ramifications, that it's brought down that there are 10 stages, 10 processes involved in making wheat into bread. And that's why it's brought down the Shulchan Aruch and the Code of Jewish Law. That's one of the reasons given why when one takes a piece of bread to eat, one should hold it, halachic tidbit for the morning, one should hold it with all 10 fingers. It happens to be that there are 10 words in the bracha of Amotzi, figure it out yourself, and also 10 processes involved with the bread. And that's why halacha l'maisa for our lives is brought down the Shulchan Aruch. When you take a slice of bread to eat, not only on Shabbos, during the week, you're eating a sandwich, so when you say Hamotzi, you shouldn't hold it in one hand, you should hold it with all 10 fingers in saying the bracha. End of parentheses. Be that as it may, that's the model that life is about. The model is being able to take from the wheat and make it into bread. And that's why he says in a nutshell, if you had to characterize what our lives are about, the top of eight, where the arrow is, our job is to be able to separate the bad from the good. That is what our lives are all about. And indeed, he quotes such a beautiful pasuk, a very famous pasuk in Kohelet. And he explains it along this line in 8, where he says, the verse in Kohelet says, Ki adam ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov v'lo yechta. There's no man who's a tzadik, who's a righteous person on this earth, who will do good, v'lo yechta and not sin. So he explains according to Nefesh HaChaim so beautifully this verse, and he says, there is no man who lives in this world. Ba'aretz represents the artzios, the physicality of this world. It is impossible living in the physical elements that we live in that we're not going to be lo yechta, that we're not going to be yechtia tamatara, that we're not going to miss the mark. That's what sin really means. Lachtia tamatara, to miss the mark, like in shooting arrows. When you're involved in being so involved in the physical elements of this world, it's very hard to be able to raise every single element of this world and hit that, bullseye that everything has to be for the service of God. We get so waylaid in our lives that we don't know good from bad and bad from good. Having said this, we can now appreciate what the 6 days of the week is about, what the Mishkan is about, and what Shabbos is about. The 6 days of the week is Livarer et Tapsolet Mitocha Ochel. The 6 days of the week is to take the bad from the good. Is to be able to elevate the work week into an experience to sort away the Sur Meira, sort away all the negative elements, and be able to have the positive, to turn the wheat into bread. And he says, that's why we know the model of the Mishkan is really the model of the creation of Shemayim and Aretz. And there's a lot said on how the Mishkan really represents a second creation of the heaven and earth world. The Svarim, it's brought down in the books that the 39 malachot, the 39 activities that are forbidden to do on Shabbos, those are the famous 39 activities forbidden on Shabbos we learn from the 39 activities that were found in the Mishkan. What they needed to do to create a Mishkan, they had to plow in order to get, and they had to die, and they had to do all these famous 39 categories. These 39 categories that were involved in the building of the Mishkan correspond to the 39 aspects of the curse that Adam was cursed with once he sinned in this world. Putting this in simple English, the 39 categories of work that were involved in the Mishkan are the 39 ways of being able to elevate this world into a world of service of God. How you can plant, how you can sow, how you can reap, how you can die, how you can, whatever the 39 categories are, how you can cook, how you can select. These are the basic categories that we're involved with in our lives. How you can be able to elevate all of them for the service of God. The 39 categories of work therefore represent the way to be metaken, the way to fix the sin of Adam HaRishon, and to, so to speak, recreate the world post-sin. Where the model, the Mishkan, is a model of what our lives are about, of being able to take the different aspects of our workday world and be able to utilize them for a mikamah, for a purpose of the service of God. And that's the model of what these 39 malachos are. But here comes the key. If the 39 activities for which the Mishkan was built with are the aspects, are the model for our lives of how we take our work week and we elevate it for Shabbos, how we utilize all the, elevate it for God, how we utilize all these activities for the one purpose of separating negative from positive, how we work through the entire week in order to reach a level of trying to find Kedusha, trying to find holiness, so Shabbos becomes the time when not doing these 39 acts of malacha, by sitting back and not being involved in them, you come to that same conclusion of a relationship with God, of finding holiness. Let me repeat that idea because this is the key idea. The 6 days of the week represent the challenge of being able to separate the good from the bad in this world and to find God. Shabbos is about not being involved in those 39 aspects. Shabbos is about being able to access that which is there, the connection with God. So by during the week you have to work really hard for a relationship with God, on Shabbos stop working and just feel God, be able to access God that way. And that's why the key of Shabbos is to feel the Hamlacha HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is to feel God's kingship upon us. And we say that in our davening. Sometimes we run through davening so fast we don't see the beauty in our davening. We say in our davening on Shabbos morning, Yismechu b'machusecha shomrei Shabbat. We rejoice in your kingship, those who keep the Shabbat. That's what Shabbos is about. Shabbos is about rejoicing in God's kingship. Shabbos is about the level of Adam before he sinned. Shabbos is about the Jewish people on Mount Sinai before they sinned, when they said, Nasa v'nishma, we will do and we will listen, and they accept God as king. That's what Shabbos is about. Shabbos is about that realization that God is right here. God is here where we don't have to work so hard to separate the good from the bad. Shabbos is the whole week there. Not the whole week, but the week that is whole, that you don't have to work through. That's what Shabbos is about. Shabbos is about the spirituality is there. The good and the bad are separated for us. But Shabbos is about our ability to just access that and to live one day a week in that pure state of Adam HaRishon before he sinned. Trying to bring this down a little bit to the level of the real and the practical. That's how Rashi explains what the Neshama Yesera is about, our extra soul. It's a wild Rashi. We all know we have an extra soul on Shabbos. Come Shabbos, an extra soul is given to us. And that's why at the conclusion of Shabbos, we have the Besamim, we have the spices, we feel bad our soul is leaving us. So ask Rashi, so Gemara in Beitza, what about Neshama Yesera? Ask Rashi, well, what is the Neshama Yesera? So he says in 13 the following definition. He says, it's Rochav Lev. It's the expansion of the heart, l'menucha v'l'simcha, for peace, for tranquility, for simcha, for joy. Okay, that's how we would expect the Neshama Yesera, a spiritual definition. But then Rashi throws in a good left curveball here. He says, v'liyol patuach l'rvacha, v'yochal v'yishteh v'ein nafsho katzalav. The second part of the Neshama Yesera is that you're able to eat and drink and you enjoy yourself on Shabbos, where you never say, I've had enough to eat, I have enough to drink. You can always eat and always drink on Shabbos. You have plenty of room to eat and drink. So you say, that can show me you say that? My extra soul that I can eat and drink some more? That's so non-spiritual. But this, my friends, is the key. Because Shabbos is the ability to unite the physical and the spiritual. Shabbos is the ability where the physical and the spiritual really become one. While all week we're struggling with that balance, Shabbos we live like Adam HaRishon, where we spoke about Lo Hispo Shashu, there was no Busha, because there was no contradiction in terms. The physical was the spiritual, that's Shabbos. Shabbos is an Neshama Yesera where the physical eating of Shabbos becomes a spiritual reality, becomes enjoying physical food, becomes a spiritual experience, becomes part and parcel of what my Neshama Yesera, my extra soul is about. And that's why there is such an emphasis on Shabbos, as we spoke about, a nice clothes, a nice food, and special food on Shabbos, because Shabbos is about la'aneget ha-Shabbat, to enjoy the Shabbat, and the way to enjoy the Shabbat is through physical things, through nice clothes, through eating, through drinking. That's the way to enjoy the Shabbos. Then he quotes a great Rabbi Shmuel Salanter. He says, there's a danger in that too. He says, Yitachen la'adam she'ochal ta-Shabbat. A person could literally eat his Shabbos im hatzimis vim hatzalon piyachad, with hatzimis and cholon put together. What does that mean? It means that if you get so caught up in self that all you think about Shabbos is what? Good food. All you think Shabbos is hatzimis and cholon and whatever nice food it is. And then you've lost the mark. Shabbos is about having the hatzimis and the cholon in order to enjoy the spiritual aspect of the day. But if you're just going to eat the hatzimis and cholon and go to sleep and say, you know, I've gained 5 more pounds on Shabbos, so we've lost the mark. Trying to bring this down, perhaps, into a little bit more practical in our lives, of how do we access this aspect of Shabbos, and how are we able to really touch in and this ability to balance the physical and the spiritual, to be able to maintain a relationship wherein the physical and spiritual are really one. So very briefly, I'd like to take a look at two insights of Rav Wolbe and Ali Shur in sources 14 and 15a. One insight on more of a philosophical, intellectual level, and the second on a much more practical level. Says Rav Wolbe, if we take a look at the second bracha that we say, the second part of the Shemoneh Esrei that we say in the Shabbos davening and all of our Shabbos davening, if we listen to it very closely, it's very strange. Let's take a look at it. We'll see what's so strange about it. We say to God the following. We ask God to sanctify us in His mitzvah, and give us a chelek, a portion in your Torah. So says Rav Wolbe, hold on a second. We always say to God, sanctify us in your mitzvahs. Every time we say a bracha, we say, Asher to the Shana mitzvah, God who sanctified us in His commandments. So what is this coming to add? And you should give us a portion of your Torah. We already have the Torah. We say it every morning that God gave us the Torah. So what are we adding on Shabbos that we wouldn't know before? So it says Rav Wolbe the following with the asterisks. Havei Omer, therefore I say. Hakol yesh lanu kvar. You know, we have everything. We have Torah. We have mitzvot. We have Shabbos. Yeah, we have it all. Aval b'pnimiyut nafshenu b'poal o lo zachinu lahem. But you know what? Inside of us, we don't have any of them. Yes, they're all were given to us. And yes, they're all there on the table to be taken. But how many of us have actually been able to bring them toch tochenu into our lives? Very few. The request that we're asking for on Shabbos, every tefillah, is we're asking God, help us open up a little bit within us that we should feel the holiness. We should feel the Torah. We should feel the Shabbos. And I think on level number one, this is really where the challenge is. We've been through, Baruch Hashem, many Shabboses of our lives. But how many Shabboses have we really felt? How many of them have really transformed our lives? How many of them have really been a spiritual oasis in our lives? Part one of the practical level is to daven to God, help us open up. If we're at least conscious of the fact that we need to open up and bring Shabbos in, we're already halfway there. If we're at least conscious of the fact that Shabbos is right by outside our doorstep and we just haven't opened the door and let it in to really who we are to affect us, so then already we've opened the door and let it in to have it affect us. The second thing Rav Wolbe says is the following. He says, and he gives a wonderful suggestion. I'd like to develop what Rav Wolbe says. I'm now going to add something and then we'll do Rav Wolbe. Let's do Rav Wolbe and then I'll add something. Rav Wolbe says that perhaps as a practical mode of being able to enjoy Shabbos and to feel Shabbos and to enjoy the physical aspect of Shabbos, he says, when you eat the first kizayit, the first required amount of bread after hamotzi, so really get into that piece of bread. Really feel that this piece of bread is la'aneget ha-shabbat, is not only to make you feel good, but it's somehow being able to access the spirituality of this day. That there's something in this bread that's going to allow me to feel the specialness of this day. Now let me add something on Rav Wolbe. We know that in terms of matzah, Pesach night. So how do we eat matzah, that first kizayit of matzah? Okay, by the sixth day maybe we're tired of matzah. Okay, grant you. But that first night of matzah, that first bite, we haven't had it. Some people don't eat it for a month, a week, whatever it is. You haven't had matzah in a long time. How do you eat that first bite? Ah, is that first bite powerful, right? A lot of people close their eyes. We put so much into that matzah, and that matzah is such a powerful spiritual matzah. And we're able to take something very physical and really make it into a spiritual experience. I think that's what Rav Wolbe is saying to do every Shabbos. Every Friday night, Shabbos, Shal Shudas, to be able to eat that first kizayit of bread, just closing yourself out to the world around you. And really trying to get into the experience of Shabbos through something physical. This piece of bread that I'm eating is a chelik of the Kedushas of Shabbos. We are so quick to, you know, we haven't talked for a good 2 minutes now, to have something to say to somebody. We're thinking about what am I going to serve next. Stop. Enjoy the first piece of bread. Allow it to be an experience of not just physical pleasure, really the pleasure of the Shabbos. Having said this, we can now understand so beautifully what is the connection between the mask of Moshe and the light of Moshe and Shabbos. Says the Sfas Emes in 15b, L'rameiz ki b'Shabbat machsir Moshe Rabbeinu livnei Yisrael ha'edim. On Shabbos, Moshe Rabbeinu returns to Bnei Yisrael the two crowns that they lost of Naseh and Nishma after they did the sin of the Egel HaZahav, the two of the golden calf. We level where they were that physical and spiritual and perfect balance. Those were those crowns represented. When they sinned, those were taken away from them. The one individual who did not have those crowns taken away from him was Moshe. The Karan or Panav, the light of his face, was the two crowns, was his ability, as the Sifti Chaim says on the next page, based on the Maharsha, it was the light of Adam HaRishon that Moshe Rabbeinu's face shone with. He reached a level, L'zichuch HaChomer Ad Shema'or HaGashmi Karan or Ruchani or Neshama. He reached a level of such purity of the physical body that it was reflected in that spiritual light, the spirit of his neshama. Moshe Rabbeinu's light represents his ability to be back on the level of Adam HaRishon, and that's the level he lived on, where the physical and spiritual were in sync one with the other. He knew the difference between Tov and Ra, that's the masveh, that's the mask, where he knew how to differentiate and separate between the two. On Shabbos, Moshe Rabbeinu gives us back those crowns. Shabbos, we are given back that special level of the Or Panav. And in fact, the Baal HaTurim says that's the connection between the two sections, because on Shabbos, every Jew's face is aglow with that Karan Or, with that glow of Moshe Rabbeinu's face. Shabbos is the one time a week when we come back to that level of the physical and the spiritual in sync one with each other, that we're able to obtain that level of closeness with God and really not having contradictions within our own lives. That's what Shabbos is all about. It's the ability to be able to hold on as a gift that one time a week. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu begins with this immediately after the sin of the golden calf. He says, yes, you sinned, but you still have one day a week where you can go back to that previous level, and that Shabbos. That's the gift of the faith aglow. Just like to briefly share a story that is found in this new book of the Rav by Rabbi Rakefet on stories that he collected from different teachings of the Rav. So he tells a story about the different individuals that lived in the shtetl of the past. So the Rav says, I'm quoting now, I knew these Jews well and I constantly spoke with them. You know, the porters and the water carriers, we've all heard stories about them. They were sincerely pious Jews who willingly sacrificed for their spiritual commitments. I once spoke with one of them who was frail and short. He constantly carried heavy metal pieces and I wonder where he got the physical strength to support his weight. His load was always tied around him with a thick cord and he totally resembled a coolie. On the Shabbat, I saw this very Jew, and I did not recognize him. He came over to me in his tattered kapata. It was covered with endless patches, and even the patches had patches. Yet his face shone with the joy of the Shabbat. I recognized in the tangible fashion that a person's Shabbat countenance is totally different than his weekday appearance. And that's really where our goal is, that he didn't even recognize him. Shabbos, we're so caught up in the Mishkan world, in the world of elevation. Shabbos, we've reached that level. Just like to end with the end of this story. So I asked him, says the Rav, when will we daven Maariv, pray the evening service for the conclusion of Shabbos? At this point, every shul had been out except this one Hasidic shul. To which this individual answered, what is with you? Are you already longing for the weekdays to begin? What do you mean, when will we daven Maariv? Are we lacking anything now? And I think that's really what the beauty of Shabbos is. The beauty of Shabbos is the ability to recognize that Shabbos is a day that's special. If we would feel the Karan or Panav, if we would feel how our face are aglow on Shabbos, we would feel that physical and spiritual balance, so then why would we rush to leave Shabbos? On this level, very briefly, I think the women become the model of how you bring Shabbos into the weekday. The women giving up their mirrors was a sign of saying, let me take something physical and make from it a kli, one of the vessels for the Mishkan. This is the model of the women who understood that life is about elevating the physical to the spiritual. There's a very, very powerful Ibn Ezra, which I don't think is as well known as it should be. The Ibn Ezra says that the women who normally beautify themselves, you know, in the morning, looking in the mirror, seeing how beautiful they are, these women had such a desire to serve God that they said, we have no longer a need for these mirrors, therefore donated these mirrors for a spiritual purpose. And then says Ibn Ezra, the end of the pasuk, that they came gathering at the Ol Moed meant that they came every day to daven, to pray, and to learn Torah and to do mitzvot, to hear about the mitzvot, every day standing by the Mishkan. These women had such a spiritual drive in them that they were able to take that which is physical, elevate it to the spiritual, and try as much as possible to live on that level of the spiritual, of how we can learn more mitzvot, how we can daven, how we can infuse our physical world with the spiritual. Just conclude this idea by quoting the Baal HaTurim that says that because they did this, v'nacha aleihem ruach elokim, they had the Spirit of God that came upon them, because they really embodied what life is about, being able to elevate the physical for the spiritual and try to pursue the spiritual within the physical world we live in. Just to summarize very briefly, level number one. Level number one, the focus of Shabbos in the Mishkan represents our job during the week of being taking the 39 malachos, the 39 categories of work, and being able to make from wheat into bread, to separate things in life in order that we should be able to find godliness. It's a process of trying to have our focus, a godly focus. Shabbos, it's by not doing those 39 categories of work. Shabbos is a day where we've reached there. Shabbos is a day of Yismechu b'machusecha shomrei Shabbos, where we rejoice in God's kingship, where we're able to eat the chelen and feel it's a spiritual day. That's our neshama yaseira. That's our extra soul. The ability of the physical and the spiritual to join together. The Shabbos clothes we wear, the whole environment to be an environment that's going to be conducive for the physical and spiritual to be in sync one with each other. The ability to ask God to help us bring the Shabbos into our pnimius, into our inner part, to eat that first kisayit of bread with that really feeling of not only feeding self, but enjoying the Shabbos for the day of Shabbos as is. That's the light, the glow of Moshe's face, which is given to us as a gift every Friday night, is given back to us, where our faces are aglow. We're able to touch in with that original light, the level before the Jewish people sinned. That's the model of the women who are able to give up their mirrors. That's level one. Level number two, which we'll do very briefly, found on the next page. This beautiful book, Night of Watching, he quotes from my own teacher, Rav Soloveitchik. I learned that the reason for this reversal lies in the shattering episode which took place in the interval between God's communication to Moshe and Moshe's transmission of the divine will to the Israelites. This was a transgression of the golden calf, which indicated that the Israelites still lacked a good deal of instruction in the purity of their faith. Before this transgression, it was possible to speak to them in terms of sanctuary and all its attendant theological implications. Axioms such as the Shabbat could be left to the end as a mere reminder of fundamental principle. However, given the reality of this transgression, it became apparent that the axioms of faith had to be reemphasized before there could be any intelligible discussion of the sanctuary with its dimension of holiness. Explains to Rav, I think it's such a beautiful, simple answer, is before we can go into speaking about the Mishkan, we first have to make sure that the fundamentals of faith are clearly laid down. And the fundamentals of faith is that you have to believe in God and you can't worship idols. What is the one mitzvah which really embodies this concept of faith, of belief in God, that is against the concept of idolatry? That's the mitzvah of Shabbos. As Rabbi Kaplan, in his beautiful book on the on Shabbat, he notes in Source 30, he says that faith requires more than lip service. It must also involve action in the form of our steadfast adherence to God's will. And that's the Hebrew word for faith, it's emunah. It comes from the same root as umana, craftsman. Faith cannot be separated from action. But by what act in particular do we demonstrate our belief in God as creator? The answer is obvious. This is the observance of Shabbos. Because if you don't have the concept that God created the world and rested on the seventh day and that God was involved in this world, then you have complete chaos in this world. complete chaos in terms of morality, complete chaos in terms of the basis of meaning of this life if the world does not have a creator. Shabbos is this recognition. If we know that God created a world and did so for a purpose, we also realize that everything that furthers this purpose is good. Everything that runs counter to this purpose is evil. And the essence of Judaism is clearly purpose and morality. And he notes, in a positive sense, the Shabbat is a focus of Jewish belief. Once a week, the Jew spends a day reinforcing his belief in God. As long as the Jews keep the Shabbat, God remains an integral force in their lives. Shabbat is this recognition that God created the world in 6 days, rested on the seventh. That is a statement of faith in God, a statement of realization that God indeed runs this world. That realization has to be so embedded within us that we can never serve idols. That has to be the bedrock of our faith, of emunah, of understanding that God created the world. And as we've spoken about, emunah means action. How am I going to demonstrate that indeed I believe this of God and indeed I have faith? That is by actually doing something that's going to represent this ideal, and that's by keeping the Shabbat and recognizing this. Let's very briefly, because the hour is late, try to take this on a much deeper level and then tie all the loose ends together. We know that Shabbos, we're told that 6 days you should work, and on the seventh day, you shouldn't work. And our rabbis tell us something very strange. Rabbis say, Yehei beinecha ki'ilu kol melachtecha asuya. When Shabbos comes, you should look at it as if all your work has already been completed. So whatever you're in the middle of, forget it. Act as if it's all done. You say to yourself, this is a very strange chazal. If I'm in the middle of a business deal, so I'm in the middle of it. How can I say that? What? I should look at it. It's already finished. It's not finished. I'm in the middle of it. So what does chazal, what do our rabbis want from us when Shabbos comes? So again, the Sifti Chaim explains, it's a very, very deep, complex idea. We'll try to simplify in a minute or less. Sifti Chaim says, now what does it mean that 6 days we should work? It means that 6 days we should be involved in the process of doing our hishtadlus, of doing our effort in work. If we understand that God is the creator of the world, it doesn't mean that God created the world thousands of years ago and left it. No. God is a creator every second of the day, which means that when we work, we are not involved in work by ourselves, but we're involved in work in partnership with God, that God is very much helping us in every stage of the work that we do, which means that all that we can do in life is to be involved in the process of work. And God will be, as a partner with us, involved likewise in the process of the work. But here comes the difference. God is the one who's going to complete this process, not us. Ultimately, it's not us who are finishing any projects. And we know this to be true, and we've spoken about this many times in the past. We think that we've done A, B, and C, well, D is going to result. And what happens? Out of the blue, F comes out of it. Well, where did F come from? Well, clearly it came from God. Well, God had a different vision of how the project should end. So, therefore, if we understand that in life we never finish projects, that life, God is always, who is our partner constantly, going to finish the project in the way he wants it to be finished. So in life we can never look at anything as if we've completed it, because in life we don't complete anything. In life all we can do is do our ishtadlus, do our effort. So when the Shabbos comes, we look at ourselves and we can say to ourselves honestly, well, did I do my effort this week? The answer is yes. So then you can look at it as if you have completed that which was incumbent upon you in this week. You didn't finish the business deal? Well, I have news for you, my friends. You're never going to finish the business deal. It's out of your hands anyway. Did you do that which you needed to do this week in order to put that business deal into action? You did. So good. So now comes Shabbos, the ability to step back and say that ultimately I am not the creator. Ultimately, I am not the one who's going to complete items in this world. Ultimately, it's going to be God who's going to be completing everything, and all I have done is that which I needed to do. Which leads to, says the Sifte Chaim, what real menucha on Shabbos is about. You know what menucha means? Rest? It doesn't mean just going to have a nice Shabbos nap. That's great. But that's not what it means. It means on a much deeper level, inner tranquility. You know where inner tranquility comes from? From knowing that everything is where it should be in life. If you really have the ability to step outside of self and say, you know what, God's really running my life and not me. And so therefore I'm not going to think about what if I did that and what if I did this and then this would have happened that. You never have inner tranquility. Come Shabbos, you have to look at it as if all your work is done means what? It means the ability to step back and say, God's really running the world, not me. If you're able to do that on Shabbos, so then you're able to have this ability of saying, God is running the world. That is a statement that God is the creator. God is constantly creating. God is still involved in my personal little life. So then you're able to step back on Shabbos and say, I can truly rest, I can truly step back. And that's why the model is the model of fire. It says once again, the book A Night of Watching in 37, Swarna points out that fire is a necessary element for all kinds of work. Man's achievement in the field of technology and his mastery over the physical world are dependent in great measure upon the controlled use of fire in its many and varied forms. The prohibition against fire, therefore, more than any other prohibition, implies the suspension of man's mastery over the universe. It underlines the fact that man's mastery is limited and that God's rule is unlimited and eternal. When man believes that he has limitless power over the universe, he's on the threshold of idolatry. If he learns that his power and mastery are limited, the door to idolatry is, to a great extent, closed. Man here is being made passive on the Shabbos to show his limited nature of his creative abilities. Why fire? Fire makes a lot of sense. Because fire is the means of so much of creation. Fire, particularly today, we can understand it with so much of the technology and electricity are all sparked and fueled by fire. That's what the concept of being a master in this world is about. Not to light a fire on Shabbos is the ability to step back on Shabbos and say, ultimately, I'm not the master. Ultimately, there is a master in the world, and that's the faith of Shabbos. That's the inner tranquility of Shabbos. But he takes it one step further, and this will be our last comment. We'll tie it to the women and then summarize. Says the Night of Watching, on the second level, perhaps, the special prohibition against kindling the fire right now, being told this law, has the effect of bringing out the dramatic imagery of that all-consuming fire into which the Israelites threw gold and out of which there emerged the golden calf. Why fire now? Because fire connects with the imagery of the golden calf, where they threw the gold into the fire and out came the calf. Because what he's really saying to them is, Moshe was telling them that when they constantly remind themselves not to kindle fire on the Shabbat, it will at the same time serve as a reminder never again to kindle the destructive fire of idolatry. And we know that we speak about the destructive fire of idolatry, so on one level, clearly, it's a reference to the golden calf and it's a reminder to the people, once again, to set up a safety measure against falling into that idolatry, lacking faith. But on a deeper level, we know, as brought down in Rabbi Foyer's book, A Letter for All Ages, that anger is another example of where you lose control and it's like one committed idolatry. 38, when a person consistently loses his temper, he loses his rational sense as well. The very basis of his relationship with God can become endangered, for there's nothing to restrain him. Thus the Talmud states, the man who loses himself to anger is considered to have worshipped idols. When a person becomes unrestricted, he approaches idolatry. And I think this is the final point, that Shabbos is about being able to be in control enough that you're able to give over that control to God. Worshipping idol really means that you've lost control of self, whether it's the throwing the physical gold into the fire, whether it's anger, which is a lack of control, or any type of passion, which a person loses control, that is tantamount to what we're supposed to not be involved with on Shabbos. Shabbos is about having control. If you lose control, you're approaching idolatry. Losing control means that you don't have a sense of what life is all about. Control is the ability to take that and direct it to God. If you've lost control, you can't give up on Shabbos. And you're constantly working and thinking about the work that you have to do. And I think that once again, the women become the model for these ideas as well. The women are a model of being able to have control, of being able to take their passions and direct it for God as well. Because we know the famous Rashi that Rashi brings down, what were these mirrors that they donated to the temple? These mirrors were the mirrors they used in Egypt. When the husbands were tired after a whole day of work, so the women would come out with these mirrors and start flirting with their husbands. I look more beautiful than you do. And that would eventually lead them to having a desire for their wives, and that's how the Jewish people multiplied in Israel. That's the ability to take passion and direct it in the correct function and the correct purpose. And it's very interesting, the Klei Yikar says that the Tzokot Petach Ol Moed, that they gathered at the Tent of Meeting. So says the Klei Yikar, the Tent of Meeting was yet to be erected. We're here talking about how the tent was going to be built. So it's not like we saw in the Ibn Ezra that they're gathering to learn Torah and Mitzvah. The Tent of Meeting is a tent of their own private homes. That there is where they met with their husbands. There they knew how to be faithful, every individual, to their spouse in order to create a family structure. So I think that's what the women represent. The women, once again, are the models. Well, on the first level, the women were a model of taking the physical and elevating to the spiritual. On the second level, the women are the models of the individuals who are able to take their passions and direct it for the service of God, and are models of what faith is all about, this dedication to their husband, this dedication to their marriage. And ultimately, as people are able to really have that feeling of dedication, it's very easy then to use it as a stepping stone, as a dedication to God of what the ultimately with Shabbos is all about. So in conclusion, summarize the ideas we saw today, why the connection between Shabbat and the Mishkan. On the first level, it's a prerequisite to understand the balance of Kodesh and Chol, of this world, to be able to take the physical and the spiritual together. The Mishkan is the ability to do it during the week. Shabbos, we've reached it, that balance of holiness and the physical and the spiritual. On the second level, the Shabbos comes before the Mishkan. It's the inculcation of our faith into our lives. On the first level, the Mass for Shabbat is returned to a level of Adam, to Moshe, where our faces can be aglow on Shabbos. On the second level, the fire represents the fire of creativity, the fire of passion that has to be used and controlled in the service of God. And the women become our models for that. On the first level, the women are the creation of the spiritual from the physical. On the second level, the mirrors represent the ability to control their passions in the service of God. And the woman in the tent of meeting is the dedication to the spiritual, as well as the dedication to the marriage. And the women ultimately become our model of being able to take the concept of Shabbos and bring it into our week. The elevation of the physical for the spiritual, of looking out at how we can try to combine those two worlds, and the ability to be faithful to our spouses and ultimately faithful to God, and to be able to control our passion for the service of God, so that when Shabbos comes, we can let go and understand and really feel that God is the control in the world. And then Ba Shabbat, Ba Menucha. When Shabbat comes, the real Menucha, the real sense of balance and inner tranquility comes as well.